Hello everyone and welcome to another Mind Guru podcast. Remember, if you want to keep up to date with all of our podcasts and our new videos, please follow us on Facebook and the link will be in the description. So let's get started. So today's podcast, we're featuring a guest, goes by the name of Brandon, and he's going to talk to us about one of his experiences with mental health, how he went through it, how it affected him, and what he learned from it. So without further ado, let's get him in. Hello, Brandon.
Hello, how's it going?
Hello. Yes, it's good. It's good. So you have an experience that you want to share with us then today. Do you want to run us quickly through what that is?
So just a brief little timeline. Back in 2017, there was something that was out of my control. And then rather than sort of talk about it or open up, I kind of internalized it and put a lot of blame on myself and basically just tortured myself for a couple of weeks. And ultimately, it led to me needing an intervention. And I was kind of escorted through the mental health services.
Well, okay. But you came out on the other end better though, yeah?
Oh, 100%. It's definitely a learning experience. Because like the biggest thing for me was growing up, I never would have saw myself as someone who would have mental health issues or need help in that sort of way. I've always been quite independent. And it was quite humbling kind of realize that I can be vulnerable and I can get help, and it's actually nothing to be ashamed of.
You know, you speak a lot of truths there. A lot of people a lot of people think that their problems are insignificant compared to others. I mean, if it's a problem, it's basically if something bothers you, then it's a problem. Regardless of how big or small it is, could be the end of the world, could be you stubbed your toe. If it bothers you, then it bothers you. I'm going to give the leash to you. You can tell us as much as you want. Just, you know, the floor is yours. So share your experience with us.
So do you want me to go through like
just tell us what happened. So from start to finish, whatever, as much detail or as little detail as you want, just so we can get a rough idea of what it is that you went through, so we can feel what you felt.
Okay. Like I said, it started in 2017. I won't go into like uber specific details, but essentially there was something that was no longer in my control. And it made me feel quite powerless and quite helpless. And like I said before, rather than reaching out and talking about it, I kind of tried to sort of toughen up and man it out. And then rather than like ask for help, I just felt a lot of shame. So I kept it hidden. And it got to the point where I was hiding how I was feeling to everybody, because I knew that if I didn't put on a brave face, people would ask me what's up. And that was like the last thing I wanted to do. But then it meant that because I was bottling up all through the day, when it came time and I was alone in my room, that's when all the thoughts just flooded back to me. So it was like I was bottling up a day's worth of emotion and then just exploding up late at night. This went on for a couple of weeks, and during which it was just getting worse and worse. So like I'd have like low crashes where I would just feel completely useless and not feel like I even just deserve to be around, really. Stopped eating. I hardly slept. And eventually just kind of drifted. Well, it was all, I say drifted. It's kind of weird. It was almost like I no longer saw days. I just saw like a moment of time that just kind of meshed into one. Because I was just all over the place, really. It did lead to a suicide attempt, But luckily, that was prevented. And that was quite weird because, like I said, you don't really think about this because, well, you don't really think about it. You do, and you always kind of brush it off because you're like, that had never happened to me. It gets to the point where you start digging in with your emotions, and it gets harder and harder to pull yourself out. And it's so easy to kind of just go down a completely logical route of like, this is my problem. I can't sort it. No one can help me. And you can become quite cynical. And I found what I was doing was I was trying to predict what people would say. So I was like, there's no point in me bringing up my problem because I know what they're going to say, and that's not going to help me. So rather than go through the pointlessness of it all, I'll just keep burying it inside and keep carrying it. And it was doing me no favors. I can look back and see how, not I wouldn't say silly because it's a bit more serious than that, but how much I was damaging myself just not talking about it. And that was one of the big things that I had to sort of come to terms with, is that people can surprise you, and you shouldn't just sort of presume what people are going to think or do or say.
Yeah. I can imagine that a lot of people can relate to what you're saying. There is so in all mental health cases that I've seen that I've ever encountered, the number one problem is the person themselves. And I know that sounds kind of arrogant to say. However, when you think about it, you can offer it's the old saying, you can take a horse to water, but you can't make it drink. You can offer someone every single piece of advice, of help, of support in the world. But if they aren't in the position where they want to take that, well, then it's basically pointless. So if you're not open to the idea of getting that support, you know, even if it was being offered to you left, right, and center, if you're closed to that, then it's not going to make any difference anyway. So I know 100% of people are the same as that. So, you know, keeping it to yourself and locking yourself away is basically what most people do. It's a very normal response. So I wouldn't be ashamed of doing that in the past. It's a naive thing to have done because, you know, not everyone has been through those experiences, so they haven't learned from them. That's all it's down to, is just not having that experience in the first hand. So I wouldn't be ashamed of, you know, keeping it to yourself and bottling it up because, you know, yes, it did a lot of damage, but it put you in a position where you could learn from it. So
Yeah.
you've come out better on the other side.
Yeah, 100%. So shortly after going through that downward spiral, I was actually put to the Edith Cavell Centre, where I was supervised, pretty much hourly watched, for about 2 weeks. And that kind of just brought it home how much people, like, even though it was their job. But it was just like, oh, actually, these people are, there are actually people there for you. And that immediate support was like really quite encouraging, quite supportive. So it's just little things that can sort of pull you along and help you through.
That's yeah. I think so when people actually offer you support, it can be quite surprising. I know for I know in my experience, whenever people say thank you for me doing my regular day, you know, day job, I'm surprised because that's not a normal thing for people to be doing. It should be, you know, of course, it should be normal for people to be helpful and useful. But in society nowadays, we all know that it's just expected that you do your stuff. So when people do actually offer you help and support, and you know people are there for you and they care for you, it can be quite eye-opening at how much you actually want their help and support. I mean, I've been through similar experiences with, you know, I thought I was on my own, and then I found support in people that I didn't expect to find it from, and you know, it changed my view on how to look at people's support. So can I just ask, how did it feel when you first went into that center? Did you feel like you were like, I don't know, in a prison, or was it, did it feel quite welcoming, like a sort of a rehab, I suppose?
Well, it's a bit of a weird one for me because of the amount of traveling I have to do to get down there. I ended up coming at like sort of 10 o'clock at night, 11 o'clock at night. So it was very, very dark already, which obviously, the setting, like with it being so dark, and so like obviously they've got to ask you a lot of questions. You have to like surrender certain items like phone charges and stuff like that when you go in. So it was kind of, it felt kind of clinical and quite cold. And it was quite, not sad, but with it being so quiet, it gave me a lot of time to think about what happened. By the way, no one told me that I was going to have hourly checks. So I woke up in the middle of the night to some nurse looking over me,
Yeah.
which frightened me. But then I realized, oh, okay. That's what that's for. But then
Well,
actually,
actually,
like, but then in the morning, there's people, there's more people about. It's more of a lively atmosphere. They've got games coming along. I mean, they did offer me the option of wearing like their pajamas, like hospital pajamas, but I was like determined to keep some sort of independence, which was, they weren't doing it to be nasty. They were just saying if you need pajamas, it's there. But that was how I found a little slice of control.
yeah,
Yeah, well.
that's actually a very good keyword, control. I'll talk about this in my video presentations when I get around to submitting them all. But control is a very, very big part of who we are, and
Yeah.
that is at its core what mental health is all about, is about how much control you have over the way you feel. And you don't actually have a lot, believe it or not. A lot of the way you feel is down to, how you're brought up and how you see the world. So you can only get a little bit of control. I completely understand where you're coming from as well with being offered pajamas. We've all been in school and had the wrong PE shorts, and then they say, "Oh, have some from the lost and found." Yeah, they're being nice. They're giving you some spare shorts, but they're not your shorts.
Yeah.
So yeah, it's I can imagine that was probably quite uncomfortable. But yeah, I suppose it was probably quite a nice change to be somewhere where people were actually. Well, I suppose the hourly checks probably weren't amazing, but I reckon it would have been quite nice to have had somewhere where you felt protected, I suppose.
So the biggest thing is just having that connection to immediate, like, so for me, like, when it came around to when I realized how bad my mental health had gotten, in the sort of days leading up to being put to the Edith Cavell Centre, I felt really, really like weird. Like, I felt like this is insane. I felt like no one should be feeling like this. It's just horrible. Like, I felt like a freak, but actually being around people, like I said, that were not only like, it sounds really bad, but if someone was to say, oh, everyone feels like this, like coming from a mate, it's not got a lot of credibility because it's like, oh, they're just being nice. But to have actual professionals diagnosing it to confirm that, it's almost like getting an expert in to say, no, this is actually fine. You can feel like this. It's not the end of the world. That was what was really comforting. Having the professionals around you that weren't just trying to like pander to you, or not pander, but weren't like, it wasn't their job to be nice, it wasn't their job to be your friend, it was their job to tell you the facts as they are.
Yeah, I think a lot of people appreciate getting a professional review on their mental health, because it's nice to get that confirmation that you're not crazy.
Yeah,
It
and
is actually legitimate.
yeah, well, it's so easy for people like your friends especially to just kind of talk you up and be like, oh, it's fine and all this stuff. But yeah,
Sometimes
of
that can be
course.
very detrimental as well. Moving on from the centre, though, what did you do after you left? Because I assume you weren't there that long, were you?
So I was there for about 2 or 3 weeks. It's a bit blurry just because of how far, well, one of how far away it is in the past now for me. I've sort of not shut that bit off, but it's very hard for me to remember a lot of that period of my life. It's really, really hard. Like I've got certain bits that are really, really clear, almost like little moments, but as a whole, it's quite blurry. And I think it's just because of how I
That's
was feeling at
absolutely
the time.
fine. If you know, if you can't remember everything, that's absolutely fine. But did you
Oh
so
no.
you mentioned about DCMH, didn't you, to me before?
Yeah. So before I was able to leave the centre, I had to be cleared by an army doctor over at Colchester, basically like an army, like professional psychologist. But that was only on the recommendations of the psychiatrist at the centre. So I saw three different psychologists over the 3 weeks, but that wasn't to do with anything more than just, well, one of them was like a general psychologist, and then there was a more specialist psychologist, and then the third one was another general psychologist who like basically had to like okay me to then go through to the army psychologist, then be like ticked off, because they know like they're there for you, so they wanted to make absolutely sure that I was okay and not just like putting on a brave face, which I definitely try to do, but they see through that in a heartbeat
I can
because you
imagine.
can try and be as big and brave as you want, but they'll see it in your face. Like they're trained and all that stuff, they can see the cues. And the amount of times when I would be asked like how am I feeling, and I would just nod and be like, yeah, I'm okay. But inside absolutely dying, and they'd be like, no.
Well, that's probably a good thing, to be fair, because I can imagine a lot of people would lie through their teeth just to feel a bit more normal.
Well, again, so for me, I felt like I wanted to be normal again. So it was almost like I wanted to, almost like denial. Like I was like, yeah, I'm not going to let this get me down. I'm just going to wake up and feel better, was how I was trying to like almost attack it.
Well, you'd be surprised that when we talk about mental health, a lot of people say, you know, oh, it's to do with what you're, how you're feeling, what you think, and things like that. And one of the big things that I try to impress on people is that just because it's in your head doesn't mean that it's actually in your head. A lot, you'd be surprised. A lot of the time, things can be to do with chemicals. So there's certain chemicals in the brain, certain chemicals in the body that, if they're not right, will make you feel like crap. And no matter how you think you feel, it could just be a simple problem like that. I mean, I'm not saying everyone's problems are simple, but you'd be amazed at how simple these things can be at their very core. And when you start involving psychologists and psychiatrists, it's almost as if you like make it into this big thing. And for some people, that can be really quite daunting because they don't feel like their problems are very big. But they feel like their problems are big, if that makes sense.
Well,
So
one of the first things they did was put me on sleep medication to help me sleep, and that actually did have a massive impact.
Sleep is a
Just clears your
huge
head.
part of my mouth. Getting a good night's sleep
But
can massively change things.
I didn't realize, and again, a part of me was didn't want to accept the sleep medication because I thought, no, why would I need, like, I don't need this. I'm tougher than this. But as soon as I just stopped, like, literally just let go of the pride. And just let myself heal, and take the advice, and just I was on the up. And I think that's a big thing as well, is just letting go of the pride and just letting yourself, like, it's almost like if you break your leg, everyone could see that you clearly cannot go for a run, and there I was with a metaphorical like broken leg trying to do sprints with Usain Bolt, like thinking, no, it's fine, it's just a broken leg, I can do it, yeah. I needed to let myself heal.
I think that's something that a lot of people could learn from, to be honest. I mean, I myself, I'm guilty of it. When I was younger, that's exactly the attitude I had. And it got me into a lot of bad situations, mental health wise. I mean, so my last podcast, I shared a story about where I was working last. I've got a lot of like bigger stories, but you know, a lot of the time it's just down to me being essentially arrogant, really trying to keep it, you know, keep a brave face on things. So yeah, so I can guarantee you a lot of people can learn from that. So when do you think, sorry, what were you saying?
I was gonna say, sorry, you asked me what happened after the centre. So after the centre, I then had 3 months off sick leave, just to recoup with my family for a bit, which was quite nice. That definitely helped sort of like just calm me down. and again make me feel more normal again, like doing normal things. I've not really asked him like how I was for the third, like for the 3 months that I was with him. But
Well,
yeah, that certainly helped.
I can imagine being in that environment, because obviously if you're in the centre, you've got the support from the professionals, but it's a different kind of support when you go home, especially if you're with your family. I mean, I know that I'm much healthier when I'm at home with my family for long periods of time than I am anywhere else, just because of the type of support that they can give.
And I think I'm really lucky to have that kind of support. I know there's a lot of people out there who maybe not have that. And that's certainly something I need to be thankful for more. It's just how much support I can get from my family.
Yeah, I completely agree. I mean, for the people that don't have that support, I mean, there's people that have entire families that just don't support them as well. I try to teach that your best support is from yourself, because if you so obviously we try to teach through to understanding the problems, and if you understand what's going on, what's actually going on, then you can support yourself enough so that you don't need that much support from other people. I mean, everyone will go into positions where, you know, you could be the smartest person in the world when it comes to mental health, and you'd still require some support from some people. But at least, you know, if we can mitigate as much of that as possible, so that way, for the people who don't have family networks, or people who are on their own, they don't struggle quite as much. That's what we're hopefully trying to achieve, because obviously we know a lot of people who are on their own. People who move all over the world without families, without people that they've got. So it's good to impress that, yeah, you know, having that support at home, it's good, but then learning how to cope on your own as well. So learning through other people's experiences, learning through the lessons that we'll be doing, can hopefully give you that sort of mitigation between having good mental health and having poor mental health. So when do you think it ended for you,
Oh God.
sorry? When did it end for you?
So for me, I had about a year of cognitive behavior therapy through DCMH. I'd probably say it's really weird. Like if I had to say when I'm feeling myself again, probably about 2 years it took me till about 2019, early 2020s. So I felt like 100% again. But I'd say like I was in a good place after about a year. Probably like a solid good place.
That's pretty good though. I mean, if you look at PTSD victims, for example, they can take decades to recover from their, you know, their mental health issues. So it's not a quick process at all. I mean, I can tell you all the advice that I've got, and it's not going to happen overnight. It's definitely something that, I mean, I took years to get over one of the things that happened to me, and just because of the way that it works. It's not a, you know, it's not a quick thing. It is a long time to fix, but it's good that you've managed to get to that point where you can say that you are happy, that you are back to normal. You know, because it's definitely good that you acknowledge that.
Well, this is the thing what the CBT sort of brought out. So, it wasn't just about like trying to fix me. It was trying to find like what was causing me to think the way I was, if that makes sense.
Yeah.
So it wasn't just a case of like, this is wrong. It was more a case of why are you thinking like that, and then kind of just going through the steps of like trying to think about things differently.
Can
And
I
that's
ask,
certainly it, go on.
what did you think of CBT when you started it? Did you think it was weird, or were you quite comfortable with it? How did it make you feel?
I'll be honest, I hated it. Honest, I really, really hated it. It was to me it seemed kind of bizarre because it's not really something that I understood, so I was immediately quite skeptical of it.
That's actually quite normal, if I'm
But
honest.
yeah, but it's like so I'd have a CBT session and I'd go there trying to be all like positive, but it would just absolutely drain me. It would literally kick my ass. Sorry, I won't swear. It kick my It would really just drain me completely. And I would walk away and thinking, like, I can't do another one of them. That's horrible. But then, like, I'd sort of perk myself back up. And, like, the next day, I'd actually feel really, really good. So it was like a necessary pain.
Yeah, there's
Just kind of like confront things and go through it.
a lot of therapies. The CBT is pretty much the standard one that people will do because it's generally works for most things. But as we progress through the videos that we'll be doing, we're going to look at things like rapid eye movement desensitization therapy, which is a very bizarre therapy. But it's all it's to do that they're all to do the same thing. They just want you to basically defragment your brain, essentially, because clearly, if you're bothered by something, then it means that there's something in the wrong part of your brain and it needs to move back into the memory banks and, be forgotten about. Well, not forgotten about, but, it needs to be pushed back where it's not important anymore. So we need to take things from the front and put them to the back. Most therapy is to do that. I mean, they all differ. They all have different techniques and different standards, but that's generally what CBT is for. I mean, I've done CBT. I didn't enjoy it at all. I felt like I
It's
didn't really
horrible.
get anywhere with it. But yeah, I mean, it depends on who you've got. It depends on what you're talking about. For some people, CBT can be the absolutely amazing thing in the world, but then others, another kind of therapy might be what's best for them. So for people that are listening, it's obviously important that you don't just do CBT and then say, "Oh, you know what? I can't be bothered with it because it's a waste of my time." Try other therapies because there are loads and loads of therapies out there. I mean, all you have to do is just Google it, and the list is endless. There's so many different techniques. So, did you do anything other than CBT, or just focus on CBT the whole time?
So there was quite a lot of CBT. Also had like I had to keep a mental diary. So where I would document like how like so if someone says something to me that I didn't like, I'd put it in the diary, and then rather than like freak out about it, I just have to like explain, okay, how do I feel? Is that really that important? No, and kind of like almost do like a branching diagram of like just to explain. Just to help me kind of not explain, but understand my emotions and realize that actually that's not a big deal.
That's actually a very good practice to have. So one of the things I teach people is that when you are encountered with a problem, you ask yourself, does it affect you? If it does affect you, okay, is there anything you can do about it? If not, well then, okay, is there a reason to care about it? If there's no reason to care about it, then why do you care about it? Why do you let it affect you? And I know it's very simple to say that. and in practice, it can be quite difficult, but it's one of those things where if you can change your mindset, you can change your entire world. So just viewing things differently can make a massive difference.
Definitely. Well, the biggest thing for me was, well, the big thing for me was I'm quite autonomous, which I didn't realize, but that just basically means that I find it very hard to find like a gray area. It's either 100% or nothing. So, like, if you said to me, like, if you came with a problem, I'll either be really invested in it 100%, or I just won't care. Like, I find it really hard to like pick the level of care for every situation.
Well, that's obviously just an individual thing. I mean, I'm the same in some circumstances as well. I'm sure a lot of people are. It depends on how much you care about it in the first place, I suppose.
Yeah.
So,
Again, the CBT helped with just helped me realize that I don't have to e either be running at 100 or at zero. I can, like, I do have control.
yeah, I mean, I completely agree. So, tempering your care about things can help relieve a lot of stress, and that can that's one of the first steps towards having a stress-free life, essentially. Is just learning how it sounds funny, but learning how not to care about stuff is very important, because the more you care about something, the more it affects you. So if it's not important to you, then you shouldn't care about it. Again, I'll go through this. I have a whole pyramid that I'll go through in one of my videos, but it's good to know that you've got that sort of, you've acquired that sort of knowledge through your CBT, because some people aren't that lucky. Some people, CBT doesn't work for them, so some people don't get that. But so lessons that you've learned over the course of this whole period of your life, what do you say is the most important sort of lesson that you've learned that you could share for other people?
So the most important lesson would be it's okay to have a bad day. Like, just because there's something out of your control or you feel low does not mean, like, you're worthless. You're allowed to have, everyone has an off day. And you just got to talk about it.
I couldn't agree more. Bad days mean nothing. It's like, just because you got bad weather doesn't mean that the entire world's got bad weather. You know, so having a bad day, I mean, it might suck. But things can always get worse. Things can always get better. All you're going to do is take it as it is. So, yeah, don't dwell on the things that are bringing you down. Okay, so have you got anything else you want to share with us, or is that your whole story?
That's pretty much the timeline of events. You know, obviously, I've had like good days and bad days. It's not all been an upward trajectory. But it's like little steps. So it wasn't about, it was never about like getting 100%. It was just about getting better. And then it was about having more good days than bad days. Then it was about, you know, you always move that goalpost on your mental health journey. Don't think that just because you have a mental health problem that your next goal is to get better or to be completely cured. The next goal should be to be in a better place than you were when you started. And just keep moving that, and eventually, you know, you will get to where you need to be on the journey.
I think that's a fantastic viewpoint on it. Baby steps. Always take baby steps.
Yeah. Don't rush it.
Yeah, I mean, truthfully, who decides when you're better? The only person that could decide that is you. So, don't.
Well, that was another thing that they said to me, because when I was going through with psychiatrists and that, that was something that they said, like, we can say certain things and we can say, like, yeah, from our point of view, you're okay, but it always has to come down to you.
Yeah. I completely agree. So that goes back to my first point, is that, you know, you can only help someone as much as they're willing to take the help. And in the end of the day, you know, if you think, it's like we see on Facebook and Instagram all the time, you see people that look like they're much happier than you are, but then it's being able to look at yourself and say, do you know what, they might have a speedboat, but I've got a family, you know.
Yeah.
So it's taking what you've got and deciding for yourself, are you happy, are you sad, you know, out of 10, are, you know, where are you on that scale, and not getting, you know, caught up in this trap of, oh well, someone else is happier than me, so therefore I must be able to be happier. Well, no, maybe you're fine. I mean, you know, maybe they've got a face on. Maybe it's not the way it is. So, so learning to, you know, take baby steps and find your own normal, I should say, is very important. So do you have anything else? Because we'll just wrap this up in a second. So, do you have anything else that you want to say before we wrap it all up?
Well, just if there is anyone struggling, just go talk to somebody. It could be anyone. Just let people know. That's about the ending of.
No, yeah.
Sorry,
well,
on it.
that's exactly what we're trying to achieve, is give people that sort of not unprofessional, if that makes sense. So we're trying to be a third party that, you know, we don't get too invested, but then we're there for the support as well. It's good. Everyone needs to ask for help. Thanks for coming on, Brendan. We'll hopefully not have to talk to you again. but if ever you do have an experience that you want to share that you're going through, then, you know, just drop us a message and we'll get you back on.
Yeah, no worries. And if anyone ever does want to talk to me about anything, like I said, I've been through the system, so I can be there to help and advise if people have questions or whatever.
Yeah, of course. Sorted. All right. Well, thank you very much. We'll see you in a bit.
Oh, no worries, dude.
All right. Cheers. Later. Thank you. Bye. Bye. So that was Brandon and his story with mental health. So hopefully everyone's enjoyed it and learned something from it. So look forward to the next podcast. And as always, have a good one.